Kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino. Magandang araw at maraming salamat sa inyong pagtutok dito sa SBS Filipino. Ako po si Vanessa Bragas. Ngayong araw ay pag-uusapan natin ang isang pelikula kung saan tatanungin natin kung paano o kung ano ang mangyayari kapag ang pag-ibig, pag-aasawa at identidad ay hindi madaling maikakahon sa mga inaasahan ng lipunan. At ngayong umaga, makakasama natin ang director, producer, writer ng isang pelikulang From All Sides, si Alex McGee at si Bina Bhattacharya. Welcome Alex, welcome Bina to SBS. Welcome to SBS.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for having us. It's wonderful to be here. Yeah.
So I've watched the film beforehand because I want to have an in-depth interview about this film. So after watching the film, I kept thinking about the title From All Sides. So Bina, what does the title From All Sides mean to you? And what are you asking audience to see differently?
I think I have not seen many films made in Australia about the experience of women from a migrant background, non-white women, women from Asia, getting everything from all sides is what I'd say. You know, you're having to juggle your kids and your job, and you have to put on a bit of a brave face and get along with people as well as you can, but you've also got an internal life with your husband and with your family. So that's something that I talked about with other women my age who, you know, were mothers, who were working, who battled microaggressions in their workplace, these sorts of things, was the amount of times we would say to each other, oh, I've had a bad week, I'm getting it from all sides this week. So I thought this was very ideal for a title, and also because movies invite us to look at things from different perspectives. So it kind of had a bit of a double meaning.
Yes, that's what I also think about while watching it from all sides. Oh, we have to look from all sides of the story, the characters. Yeah. How about you, Alex? Did the title take on a different meaning to you as you were editing the film?
Yeah, I mean, it's an ensemble drama, but yeah, it's really a family drama at its heart, and it's about, I mean, it opens up with the husband and the wife, Anushka and Pascal, but you very quickly delve into the family life, and there's the son's storyline and the mother and the daughter's storyline and the relationship between each of them. So it's a mosaic, really, and the bringing that all together in the edit was a really lovely experience. Discovering it was like there's so many different scenes and parts and lovely performances, and piecing it all together. It really is that title from all sides. Yeah, it's like the life living in multicultural suburban Sydney and discovering all parts of life there is out there.
So while you guys are making the film, were there any disagreements, or you have different ideas, and then do you argue about what should come out of this film?
This was very much Bina's story to tell. I'm there to support her. She's very much the artist. I mean, I consider it what I do artistry as well, in terms of bringing the edit together and producing it as well. But she wrote the screenplay. This was the story that came out of her, and I just wanted to support her as best as I could.
You're very modest. That's actually not true. Firstly, I just want to say, you know, Alex and I have been together for 20 years, and we've been making movies together for 10 years, and one of the things that brought us together were films. And there are very few women filmmakers with children, right? They're either like glamorous young women that aren't married yet, or they're like older single women that never married. It is incredibly rare what I do. And it's because, you know, if I had married another man, maybe they would have thought of my filmmaking as like a cute hobby. But Alex has always had this opinion of, you are a brilliant artist and the world needs to hear your voice. And that is really exceptional and different, and not a lot of women have that. So even from when he first read the script, it was like misery. I would write some every night, and he would push me in such a good way. He would be like, I really want to know more about this. I want to hear about this. He read the first draft. The son's storyline was completely different. He said, I think the son's behavior is a little bit too aggressive. Maybe we could have this instead. So you were giving me really constructive feedback as a film lover and as someone who appreciates exactly what I was trying to say, because we have so much in common as, you know, first generation generation multiracial Australians. So yes, I think from the very beginning you had a producer's eye and a very literary eye about what was going to make the film good. But yeah. Absolutely, yeah, you're very
you're really,
modest.
You're really refreshing my memory of that process. That is true. Like I was there, she was writing it every night. It took her about 2 weeks.
It was 3 weeks to get a draft.
3 weeks to get a draft. But she was writing it every night. And we had a small, this was...
We had two small children.
Two small children. So Abby was just born, wasn't she?
Abby was about one. Yeah, our daughter.
Yeah, so I'd look after the kids, put them to bed. You do it pretty much once the kids are in bed, right? But yeah, I did offer a lot of feedback during the writing process, which was nice. It was just amazing to see this story unfold before my eyes. It was a real privilege to see it come out of her and, to offer what I could to that creative process. I just hadn't read anything like it before. It was set in Campbelltown. It's like my hometown. It's where we were living at the time.
Still where we live. Yeah.
We're still in the Campbelltown area. I grew up in Campbelltown and grew up in the Burwood Croydon area. So I brought her out to Campbelltown, but it was so amazing to see her sort of fall in love with the area, and to see it on the page was incredible. I'm a Filipino Scottish background, and Bina is Indian, Australian from her mother's
white. My mum's white as Wonder Bread. She's from Adelaide.
When we first met, that's what we. One of the things that made us fall in love so quickly. We were both mixed race, and we had that in common. And so I brought her out to Campbelltown, and she, that's where we bought our first house, and we were raising our children. To see Campbelltown on the page like that, and just that whole migrant story was amazing. But having said that, to go back to the original question, yes, I think a lot of the conflict probably came in the editing process, because that's where I really shine as an editor. I love video editing is my passion. I've been creative video editing since I was a young teenager, since I could get my hands on a video editing software. I used to make films with my friends as well when I was a kid in school.
At the Performing Arts High School in Campbelltown.
Yeah. So I saw it as my project too. I really connected with the story and I wanted to do it justice. And so putting all the footage together, it's really, you're putting yourself into it as well. So, and obviously it's been as film that she's written and directed, but as a producer and editor, I obviously have creative input. So there was a lot of kind of I would edit a scene a certain way and she would push for it to be changed this way. So that's probably where the conflict came in the most.
Yeah. It wasn't, and I really want to make this point, conflict is essential to any creative process and filmmaking in particular. It is so collaborative. You are going to have disagreements with your actors, with your producers, with your editor. It is part of it. And a healthy film should have conflict. And perhaps because we trust each other so much, I can't remember ever being truly bothered by it. You would say something, I would push for something, we would negotiate, we would land somewhere really good. It is a better film because of both of our brains. So yes, we edited this film on our kitchen table while our children were watching Peppa Pig in the other room. It was really unusual. It's very kind of independent setup. But absolutely, I feel like because we have very similar experiences in many ways, which you've touched on, both growing up with one white parent and one Asian parent, and we're about the same generation, I feel like I didn't meet many mixed race people until I met you, and I feel like there's many more now, particularly in Western Sydney. I only think about the making of this film and the editing with a lot of joy, because it was actually a lot of fun to make it with you. And I always joke that we had more stress buying and selling a house in Sydney than we did making this film. We had more disagreements about that, I reckon, than we did about filmmaking, which is something we are both passionate about.
Yeah. I think I just believed in her story so much that I wanted to do it justice, really, in the edit. Yeah.
One of the lines that really stayed with me when I was watching the film was the idea that the migrant girls are not allowed to make mistakes.
Yes. Yeah?
And that line seems to carry generations of pressure, the expectation to be a good daughter, a good wife, a good mother, and a good migrant. What did you want to say, Bina, about the burden of perfection?
It's such a brilliant question. Thank you so much. That was one of my biggest goals making this film. I think as people from minority backgrounds, we internalize the idea of the good migrant, the model migrant. And even right now in Australia, I made this film, I wrote it in 2021, but I feel like it's more relevant now. We're having really nasty conversations about multiculturalism. And there's this idea that you only earn a place in Australia if you're a neurosurgeon, in a remote town somewhere, there's never this idea that we're all Australians too, and we're allowed to be mediocre, and we're allowed to make bad decisions sometimes, and we're just allowed to be normal. And I work for a theatre company, a wonderful multicultural theatre company in Western Sydney, PYT Fairfield. And something I teach our young people is almost all of them, if they come from a migrant background, their first instinct is to write perfect characters. You know, the migrant family is really good and perfect and pure and chaste, and maybe there's an evil white person who's their antagonist. And I say, do you know, white creatives never think that way. They just tell any story they want. They're much braver about it, because if they tell a bad story or, you know, an unflattering story, no one says, see, we let them into our country and this is what they do. So it was really important to me that Anushka is not a perfect person. She's amazing, and I think she's very charismatic, and I think her performance from Mon Calma is absolutely stunning. But, you know, she does things that are questionable, and that's her right. And same with her husband, Pascal. He does things that some people would find very questionable. But that is their right, and they are not less worthy of sympathy and hero status just because they are flawed sometimes. So all I wanted really was for characters of non-European background to have the same right to be messy and flawed and imperfect that white protagonists, the same grace that they're given. And I feel like it's really rare. I feel like there's a lot of purity in kind of media. You know, people go to the comments and they go, this person did the wrong thing. And I'm like, that they're allowed to. The whole point of a movie is to provoke conversation. But there's a real self-censorship you have to get through, because we are told from day one that we are only really considered part of this country if we're on our best behavior, if we're school captain, if we're, you know, leading the team at school for reconciliation, and we're never making white people uncomfortable. That's when we're earning our spot in Australia. And I wanted to do away with all of that and have very messy, flawed characters like the movies I like to see. All the movies I like have kind of questionable anti-heroes. So that was it. And I love that you pick up on that line, because we talked about it a lot. It's, you know, I thought I'd broken the cycle of being the good migrant girl. It's an important line. Thank you.
Yeah. And also the film explores bisexuality in a way we don't often see on screen, and through a married couple raising teenage children at that. Yeah. And Pascal says that when people assume he's straight, that scene when he was talking to Remy, Pascal said he sometimes feels closeted when people see him as straight. What did you want to explore about bisexual invisibility?
That's a fantastic question. You should take this one, and then I'll. Well, because that scene is really touching. What's something that we've noticed is that a lot of people from ethnic backgrounds, if they are, you know, queer or bisexual, they often still marry and have children. It's very common. There's a lot of pressure to marry. So I think we're going to see, particularly right now, the only way to buy a house is really to cohabitate with the first person you fall in love with. So I think we're going to see a proliferation of open relationships. But I think, yeah, what I've noticed is people think of Western Sydney as very socially conservative, and some of it is, but there's also a lot of people that have all kinds of alternative lifestyles and arrangements that we don't always see and that you wouldn't assume. You probably have neighbours like Pascal and Anushka and you would never know. And also, it's a really sad thing, because bisexual people are always assumed to be just whatever their partner is. So you have bisexual women who are in lesbian relationships and everybody assumes that they're a lesbian, or you have them married and everybody, you know, assumes that they're straight. And it's kind of very taboo to think about parents in particular having a sex life that goes against those sorts of, you know, codes. So, yeah, I just hadn't seen a movie about bisexual people really, and particularly male bisexuality. I feel like it's never dealt with. They're always actually gay. Do you know? That's always the sort of storyline. And I just don't think that's true. So to have this married couple, I thought was just something we hadn't seen. The only movie I could think about, we thought about this long and hard, it was Sunday Bloody Sunday, which is a wonderful movie, but it's from the 70s. Come on, we're due for an update. And yeah, I know lots of queer people who are in straight passing relationships. And, you know, is it something that they bring up at the PNC? Is it something that they bring up to other kids' parents? Is it frowned upon? And you might feel like a fraud going to Pride Day, you know? But I feel like it's an identity that's really worthy of examination. Because like I say, I feel like it's way more common than people talk about.
Yeah. I think, and I'd also hope that people that can't relate to the sexuality in the film, whether it's the polyamory or the bisexuality, can still really recognise in the film that we compartmentalise our lives. Yes. So much, and we never are really our true selves with so few people. It's a real honour and privilege to find someone that you can be all facets of your life with. So like when you're at work, that's really much your work self. When you're at home or with your family, your immediate family that you grew up with, you kind of revert back to that, to your older self when you're a teenager, and you kind of go back into your shell. I think that's one of the beautiful things about the film. You see Anushka and Pascal in all facets of their life, and you see the intimacy that they have together and the struggles that they have to sort of deal with the other aspects of their life, whether it's work and family and school, but with themselves, they're truly themselves. And that's kind of the crux of the whole relationship and the center of the film, really.
Yeah. I joke it's the most weirdly pro-marriage film you'll ever watch. It's like weirdly the most conservative pro-marriage film you'll ever see, even though it's about two bisexual people in an open relationship.
But I hear stories about people who are in a polyamorous relationship, and I want to understand that so that we don't judge people, how they live their lives. And actually, that was my introduction about, but I spoke it in Filipino.
Yeah.
I said, what happens when love, identity, and family doesn't fit into the box that society thinks of us?
Yes, I think it's really, I think just, you know, open relationships are very misunderstood. Like I say, I think they're just going to become more common because we're in such weird financial, people can't separate bad relationships anymore. Like it's really, we're in such a strange time economically. But I also thought that, again, that was really important. I could have made this entire film without the polyamorous subplot. Yeah. I could have just had a film about two people raising their kids and dealing with, you know, indirect racism and blah, blah, blah. But it was very important to me that, again, they had this part of their life that some people find distasteful or they find questionable. And I would just go, well, so what? They're allowed to do what they want. They're adults, you know. You might not like it. You don't have to. And I thought that was important. And then, of course, it gave them a secret, you know, something that they kind of – it would be very frowned upon in their community if it found out. So it kind of drives the tension a little bit dramatically. But, yeah, I obviously – like, you know, we're very open-minded. We made this film. And I would hope that most people watching it would feel the same way. And one of the best responses I got was from a woman who watched the film. And she has been, you know, single for many, many years. And she said, what I loved about this movie was, even though I personally could never have an open relationship, I loved that Anushka just did it on her own terms and it was part of what she wanted. And I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, I mean, we've screened this film for so many different audiences, and it's great to see the response and people connecting with, like, specific storylines from the film, even if they don't relate to one storyline or the other. You know, I think that there's a way in for most people, I think.
And what I found fascinating about Anushka and Pascal is that the film doesn't seem interested in telling the audience whether their open marriage is right or wrong, which you have mentioned earlier, Bina. And instead, it asks us to sit with its complexity. Yeah? And was it important to you that the film explore their relationship without judging or moralizing it?
Absolutely. I think, look, this is my joke about it, you know, the biggest stress in Anushka's life is dealing with white people. And that is, like, honestly, that is like what so many migrant women tell me. This is what so many people tell me. It's dealing with, like, little racisms living in Australia. It's not the guy in the stubby saying, go back to where you came from, although sadly we're seeing a lot of that right now. But it's the subtle stuff. It's the comment from your boss. You know, Anushka's the way she's treated at the not-for-profit she works at. That is way more stressful than what her and Pascal do in their private life, that maybe once every few months they go off to a party, okay? And I was really sick of movies about open relationships and polyamorous relationships where it was all about the man's jealousy. I found that so boring. Do you know? It was just like, it was all about the man's feeling and the man's feeling threatened now. Yes. Ooh. And I'm just like, okay, all right. But what I have observed is that for people who conduct this lifestyle well, number one, they're very secure in their relationship. You have to be. You have to be very adult. That's why the scene with her and the young guy is so funny at the end and so upsetting and so weird, without spoiling anything. But, you know, she's so secure in her marriage, and this is someone who is not, because they're from a different generation. But secondly, it's usually a separate life that people have. Like, these are ordinary people. They work ordinary jobs. They have children. But maybe once or twice a year they go and explore, you know, a part of their sexuality that's kind of that's considered a little bit fringe or unusual. But I honestly just can't imagine that being, if that was the number one stress in your life, you wouldn't keep doing it. Do you know? You would just go, okay, this is too exhausting. I'm at the age, it's too tiring to do this. I'm not going to do it anymore. So the fact that they keep it up tells me that, like, they have other stresses in their lives. And
that's,
like,
really the whole point of
this. This is
film,
where what Alex mentioned earlier about compartmentalizing.
Yeah, that's really what we were saying earlier, that the opening, that's the whole point of the film, the opening scene is them attending
a party.
A swingers party.
And
it's supposed to be attention grabbing and disarming and uncomfortable and not sure where this film is going. But then the very next scene, they're just like picking their kids up from the mother-in-law's place and it's you just realize very quickly that it's a family drama. And it's just all the day-to-day stresses that they're dealing with, living in the suburbs, sending their kids to school, going to work.
Dealing with the in-laws.
And then one of their kids has been caught on camera by Sydney trains.
Yes. And these are, you know, it was very purposeful, more stressful.
Yeah.
It's so much more stressful. Like, yeah, those little things, having to leave the office because your kid's in trouble at school, getting a phone call from your kid's school, that is so stressful.
And you're at work.
Yes, absolutely. Get it, you know, we just have thought, like, what are actually the big stresses that people like us face? And, yeah, this sort of thing that they do in their private life is, like, the least of their worries. And also just that they're a strong unit. They communicate well. There's no jealousy. This is something that they've accepted. There's a line in the film, we both came from conservative families. We wanted to get married and have kids, but we didn't want to give up this part of who we were. And I think that's just going to be an increasingly common scenario with young couples,
Since we have spoken or you have mentioned about the opening, Alex, I want to ask you specifically about the editing. So the opening immediately has this incredible energy. The music, it was so raw. The scene, and the way we're introduced to Anushka and Pascal's world. As the editor, how did you find the rhythm of the film, particularly in that opening sequence?
The opening sequence was so important for me. And, like, we had a beautiful guide track from Parvin Singh, a Melbourne artist, who I originally cut the scene to. And we had an Indian composer that kind of cut the music wrote the music to the scene after I'd cut it. It was very supposed to be dreamy and very much like you're going into this world that you haven't ever seen before. So you're like looking behind the curtain. And this club that we filmed it in with the owners were really lovely and they let us rent out the venue for very cheap. It's an actual swingers club in the inner city. But there's a black curtain in the front door. It's like it's on Parramatta Road. It's very unassuming. So it's like peering behind the curtain and then look going into this other world. And that opening tracking shot of Anushka and Pascal on the couch. It was something we came up with on the day and filming, just that push-in shot. And so that's the longest shot in the film. It's almost a minute long. It's the longest single take we have. But, yeah, so you're just pushing in and discovering this world and, seeing Anushka and Pascal and them locking eyes with another couple and then going upstairs. It's like a music video. It's just supposed to be very dreamlike and the music is almost like a trance-like as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was trying to capture with that. And the performances, oh, my goodness, were so amazing. Like the raw footage I had of that scene was incredible. Like Max Brown and Manik Karma just really, Anushka has so much dialogue in the film, but this is the one day where, like, it was just all acting with her body, and she was just amazing that day. That both of them, they were just so free-spirited and really got into it and were so brave. It was a real joy to piece that scene together. Yeah.
I was looking at film reactions online, and then there's this common thing they say, it's so raw and it's so real. Like, you can almost feel it. It's so beautiful. Anyway, let's go to Western Sydney. Okay, it feels like almost like another character in the film because it's the backdrop of the film, yeah? And there are jokes, references, and interactions that Sydneysiders can only relate to it, most especially if you're a migrant, will instantly recognize. So why was it important to tell this particular story from Campbelltown and Western Sydney rather than other familiar version of Sydney and other suburbs?
It's a great question. Anybody who knows me knows I'm very passionate about Western Sydney. Yes, I married Alex. We live very happily in the outer suburbs of Sydney. But I have this interesting idea that the outer suburbs all over the world kind of look the same. There's really not a huge difference between the outer suburbs of Sydney and the outer suburb of Melbourne and Toronto and London, where we lived, kind of ethnic suburbia looks the same all over the world. Really and truly it does. So that was one idea. Secondly, my favourite films have a really strong sense of place. So I love the films of John Waters, and Baltimore is another character in his films. And very affectionate, but also warts and all, like all the bad things about it. And something that, you know, my first film here out west, which I was a co-writer on, was supposed to be, and it is, it's a wonderful film, but it's about, you know, 2.2 million people live in Western Sydney. It's more people than Perth. And yet, most stories about Australia are either the Sydney Opera House or they're like set in the bush. You know, it's the desert. Outback. It's the outback. It's the small town and the detective has to go home and discover the secret. And they're all the same. And the thing is, 50% of Australians live in Sydney or Melbourne. This experience of Australia as a very urban, very modern, multicultural country is actually the reality. But I feel like our screens have been very scared to engage with it. They're very obsessed with this home and away 90s fantasy of what Australia looks like. I always say the white Australia policy still exists in people's minds. But in Western Sydney, you can't get away from it. It's so diverse. It gets browner the further out you go, honestly. That was really important to me to have a film I could shoot in my own backyard. I had written films set in far-flung places. I have like a noir that was set in New Orleans where we used to live. I have a film set in Pittsburgh. But it was very important to write a film that was set in my own backyard. But also just the snobbery towards Western Sydney is a lot of thinly veiled racism. You know, there's this idea that, oh, you people come from poor countries. You don't need nice trains. You don't need public transport that works. You're from shitholes with no development. Do you know? There really is. And that is such a racist assumption, but it underpins a lot of the lack of investment in Western Sydney. And there are white folk who live in Western Sydney, but yeah, that's part of it. It's like you've got to live among the povo third world country. Like there's this really awful kind of stuff people say about Western Sydney. And I just thought it was really important to say it's actually the modern face of this country. I always joke like the last election, and this was, you know, I wrote the film in 2021. We had an election in last year, 2025. We had the landslide and everyone said it was because millennials who are us, we're elder millennials, were the largest voting bloc. And they say the average voter is a 37-year-old woman with at least one parent born overseas, raising her children in an unfashionable suburb. And that's me, number one, to a T. Like I'm 40, raising my kids in an unfashionable suburb. One parent born in India, right? That's my story. And, you know, you're from a very similar family, one parent born in Manila. Actually, both your parents are born overseas because I was born in Glasgow. But we are the modern face of this country, but we don't see it on screen. So that's why, like, Western Sydney, and as a microcosm for what it means to be a multicultural country and a very urban country, despite our mythology that's obsessed with the bush, I thought was very important.
Yeah. And there's this beautiful moment. I don't know if I'm allowed. Is this a spoiler alert about the focus on yourself? Is it okay to mention it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's okay, yeah. Okay. So there's a beautiful moment when Anushka tells her daughter, Nina. Yes. I love Nina. Her performance.
Oh, my God, she's stunning.
Yes. Whenever I see her performance when she's dancing, it's a showstopper.
Correct.
And
absolutely agree. Yeah,
focus on yourself. That,
yes.
That I kind of relate to it. It resonated on me. And especially after hearing earlier in the film that migrant girls aren't allowed to make mistakes. So is Anushka trying to give her daughter a kind of freedom that perhaps she didn't experience before?
100%. So there's a lot of commentary about how millennials in particular, you know, in many ways, we're trying to break a lot of cycles. A lot of our parents, like my dad grew up in poverty, I will never understand. You know, literally my mother too. My mother grew up in Adelaide, but she grew up in like a two-bedroom house and there was like five kids and, you know, her mum was a widow from the war, blah, blah, blah. So, and then they accumulated a lot of, you know, material wealth, but still emotionally, some of them were quite stunted, you know. And our generation, we have therapy speak and we hope that we're trying to break toxic cycles from our parents and have a better life for our children. And that's Anushka and Pascal. They grew up in conservative households, but together they're modeling a very different way to be in love with somebody and to have intimacy and the kind of marriages their own parents maybe didn't have. But equally, how do we raise our daughters? For me, like, this is an interesting one for me because I am an Indian mother, but I didn't have an Indian mother. I had a white mother, but I'm now parenting my own children as a brown woman, right? And I always think about, like, that scene between Anushka and Nina is literally how I will talk to my teenage daughter if she goes through that kind of heartbreak, you know? And yes, I do think it's tied in when you come from an immigrant background as well, because there's other layers of sort of, reluctance to talk about emotional things sometimes. But I wanted to show parents that are doing their best to raise their children with a bit more freedom than maybe they had growing up. Rightly or wrongly, whether it's a good parenting decision, that's up to the audience. But we wanted to show something different.
Yeah. What do you think about Alex?
Focus on yourself.
Focus on yourself.
Yeah, I think we've got to become our own people and be comfortable with who we are. Yeah.
It's a powerful line. Yeah. It is.
Probably what I wish I'd told my younger self, you know? Yeah, I think that's probably what that scene is. Yeah.
And I think if we, all of us, will undergo like different problems and struggles, that line applies to all.
Oh,
focus on yourself at all times.
Focus on yourself. Don't worry about what other people think. Yes.
And this film brings together so many identities that are often underrepresented in Australian screens. Migrant women, bisexual parents, multicultural families, formerly incarcerated women where Anushka works, and the working class in Western Sydney community. So did you ever feel pressure to make these characters more easily understandable related to mainstream audience?
Absolutely. That was one of the biggest, like, we made this film independently, you know, we didn't have like a big backer or a big distributor or anyone financing this film. We made this film with what we had, which was our community. The food was done by an army of ethnic aunties. You know, we tried to keep costs down wherever we could. I filmed scenes at work. We had a great relationship with Campbelltown Council, who were absolutely brilliant and supported us. My work at PYT Fairfield. But the reason why was because when we pitched this film to people, the people who gatekeep the industry in this country aren't Anushka and Pascal. They're not from that background. They don't live in Western Sydney. Generally, everybody who has real power and influence in this industry is like over 45, white, lives in the inner city. They would need a packed lunch to come out to Fairfield or Campbelltown. So when we're here explaining, you know, and a lot of people are like, oh, Anushka's too mean. She's too harsh. And I'm like, is she? Or are you just used to brown women being compliant? So she seems really harsh to you. So a lot of what the struggle with this film was that we would get notes and feedback about the characters from people who aren't the audience. And there was a lot of pressure to tone down elements of it, make it more accessible. You know, why do they have to be this way? You know, you're upsetting people. We got a lot of this. But just generally, there's a lot of pressure to not show kind of well-educated migrant families, just generally. Do you know? They kind of want it to be all sad and downtrodden, not people with university educations, even though that is like a huge part of our community. And Alex, this is a really good one for you, because I remember you telling me once that when you were growing up, the only Filipino representation you had was in Priscilla Queen of the Desert, in an Australian film. Which is like, that's true. Not a good representation. It's embarrassing. Yeah, sorry. You go on. Something you've talked about for me.
My Filipino mother was the one who made me fall in love with films. Like, she would take me to the cinema pretty much every week, and we'd just watch whatever was out. We'd watch anything that was released. I just fell in love with movies growing up. And I sought out Australian films as well. Like, I was like, wow, we make films here as well. That's amazing. So I would watch all those. Like, I mean, and the 90s was a great time for Australian films. That's where Strictly Ballroom.
My favourite movie. Yeah. Australian movie.
But yeah, and Priscilla, it's an amazing film. But yes, it was even at a young age, it was like the Filipino sort of mail order bride, and the character's name was Cynthia, and my mother's name is Cynthia. So it's just like, that was my first time ever seeing like a Filipino on screen. It was quite a racist trope, actually. But this film really is a celebration of multiculturalism and mixed race families, and we found each other. The two of us, we're both from migrant households, mixed race, and it's the story we wanted to tell, and for our kids as well. Like, so I mean, I grew up in the 90s when multiculturalism was all you really heard. It was like the big policy of the 90s, and I remember those multicultural days at school, and I just felt so proud to like be Filipino and Scottish. And I remember sort of dressing up in a kilt for one of my primary school multicultural days. It never really, as a young child, it never really occurred to me that multiculturalism was a bad thing or was perceived as a bad thing. I very much had grown up by the time that kind of started to dawn on me, and you heard sort of anti-multiculturalism talk coming out of Europe, and this whole concept that multiculturalism has failed. It was a real shock to my identity, because I was so that's me. I'm multicultural Australia.
And you have such fond memories of like growing up with your Filipino cousins, like huge family, big family things.
But the older I get, and we have to hold on to it, because the older I get is like the further away I am from that that childhood experience of growing up around all my cousins and my Filipino aunties. I was at my auntie's house and cousin's house like pretty much every weekend, like fall asleep on the couch while the aunties played mahjong. And my Scottish grandparents died a long time ago. Like we can't afford to, if we could afford it, I'd take both our kids to the Philippines and Scotland before my parents died. It's just like we really yearn for that connection to our culture. And I think the older I get, the more sadly assimilated I become into the more monocultural I become, really. So it's really sad. I think multiculturalism is something we need to hold on to desperately and celebrate.
And that experience as well that you've just described, that is the thing. Like a lot of first-generation Australians, you know, with one parent born overseas or both parents born overseas, we are one step removed from our culture. We have a bit of a kind of complicated relationship with it. Maybe we don't speak the language. How embarrassing that we're here and neither of us speaks our parents' mother tongue. I do think it is that's what we wanted to show as well, like people who are very, you know, they have Aussie accents and they're very Australianized, but they still are kind of navigating some murky stuff. But I think, and also with what you're saying, a really big part of filmmaking is to make films for your own gaze, so to not internalize the white gaze or the heterosexual gaze or, you know, anything else with this film.
Yeah. And finally, after everything that this film has been through to reach audiences, what do you hope someone watching from all sides, perhaps someone who has never seen their own family, sexuality, cultural identity, or Western Sydney community reflected in this way on screen, feels when the credits roll?
Just to be seen, really. I mean, that's the experience I had during the creative process writing it. It's like seeing it come alive in the page. And it's like, wow, I need to help been to make this film because, like, I've never seen Australia like this on the screen before, and I think audiences deserve it. And it's been a real struggle to get it in front of audiences. It's been despairing at times, but we've soldiered on because we think it's important. And, you know, it might not speak to everyone, but the people it speaks to and the people it will matter to, that's important.
I think this film will be a lot of people's favorite movie. I really do, because it's just so original. It is so different from anything you've seen, and I think it will be so validating for so many people. And it's a very funny film. I think it's a good film. It stands on its own 2 feet. But yes, feeling seen, and for me, most Indians on Western screens are always the butt of the joke. They're always embarrassing. They're like Raj from The Big Bang Theory, or they're like Mindy Kaling. They're self-deprecating. And it was so important to me to have a really empowered Indian woman who is very strong in her culture. That to me was the greatest gift to my family, to my community, to my dad, who's not with us anymore, but is also why I love movies. And I also just wanted to quickly mention, we should mention another Filipino key creative on the film. We had music from Ian Escandor Eski, who is a rapper from Mount Druitt, Filipino-Australian rapper. And I approached him, you know the scene you're talking about in the garage with the dancing, you have Tamil music, but that's a Filipino-Australian rapping, talking about being third culture. So I feel like both our culture's stamp is on this film. And I just hope people watch it and think, I can make a movie too. Actually, that would be a good thing too.
Yeah, for Filipino audiences, yes. There are two songs. There's that one, which was a fusion of the Bharatanatyam, Indian music, plus with a Filipino rap in there, and the final song when the family are all dancing in the community hall. It was an Eski original as well. The Good as Gold.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and obviously they mentioned the catering as well, but there was some Filipino Canadian catering on the film. And
we shot in your Titatina's house.
Shot
in my
Titatina's house, and a few of my cousins helped out as well.
So. Yes, they were great.
Yeah, it was a very community-driven project, yeah.
I'm excited that all of Australia will watch this film on July 20.
Yes, so next Monday, July 20, 9:10 p.m. on SBS World Movies, and then on demand afterwards.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Alex and Bina, for being here.
Thank you, Vanessa. It's been a beautiful interview.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Maraming salamat sa inyong pagtutok sa SBS Filipino. Ako po si Vanessa Bragas at maaari ninyong pakinggan ang podcast na ito sa sbs.com.au/Filipino at pwede rin yung mapanood sa SBS Filipino YouTube channel. Maraming salamat at magandang umaga.
I-like, i-share, mag-comment, sundan ang SBS Filipino sa Facebook.